Hi, welcome back to Out of Focus. I'm Shannon Stewart, and I have my husband on the podcast. Have you ever wondered why relationships can feel so confusing, so hard, and even sometimes discouraging? Whether you're single, dating, or married, there are questions we all carry. And what if the struggle isn't because something is wrong with you, although I don't know, but because God is actually trying to prepare.
Why are you laughing when you said it may not be that there's something necessarily wrong with you? And you actually kind of pointed at me.
Because it was funny.
I don't know what you're talking about. I have never had any problem with any relationship.
My point was, is that sometimes God allows us to be single for a while. I know that from personal experience. And I always wondered, was there something wrong with me? Because every guy...
Yes. Next question.
Because every guy I seemed to be interested in didn't like me when I liked them. And it does start to mess with your mind just a little bit. And you start to wonder, what is it about me? Is it my smile? Is it the way I talk? Is it how tall I am? Because I actually had one guy on the bus. I will never forget this. He turned around and he looked me dead in the eyes and he said, "Why can't you look like your sister?"
I'm just wondering what your response was. Did you smack him? Because he deserved it, probably.
I think I said, because God didn't make me like her. He made me me.
There you go.
And I might have flicked my hair.
You should say, "Why do I want to settle for second?"
My sister is beautiful. She's stunning. I've always thought that. So today we're talking about what God really says about relationships and why it matters more than we think. So I have you on the podcast because you're my husband. And I know you have a lot to say about this. Why do you think singleness feels so hard for so many people? Can you go back to the time when you were single?
There's practical reasons. I know Paul said in 1 Corinthians 7, you're actually better to remain single, to remain as I am. But I think a lot of people don't realize Paul was almost 100%, I would say, married at some point. Partly of it's because the role he was at in the Sanhedrin, the Jewish religion, kind of where he was heading toward, it would have been expected of him to be married. We don't know exactly what happened. He could have gotten divorced. His wife may have divorced him after he converted to Christianity. Maybe she didn't want to. He could have been a widower. So we don't really know. But then he was single, but he had a very practical reason why, and it was basically you can devote more time to the kingdom of God, to following Jesus, if you're single. And that makes a lot of sense.
It does.
You know, if you're married, if you have children, you have a lot of responsibilities. If you're single, you don't have those responsibilities. Also, during that time, and a lot of people don't take this into account in the first century, there were a lot of torturing and execution of Christians. And I think Paul, in some ways, was saying, that's just one other thing you don't have to deal with if you stay single. Now, that sounds great on paper, but rarely do you find someone. And if God has given you, and I think being single is a gift, actually. If God has gifted you this way, good for you. And you know that you enjoy being single. But for some, it is a struggle. We know a young lady we've had conversations with, and it's a struggle. She's always wanted that relationship that she could pour herself 100% into.
I have a question.
Yeah.
Paul said it's better to be single, but he's saying that and he's married.
No, I'm saying at that point he was single.
Okay.
So we don't know what happened. If his wife maybe, like I said, divorced him, or she may have passed away.
I do agree with you. You have a lot more time to devote to your relationship with God. I remember being single in New York. I spent hours spending time with the Lord, writing in my journal, reading the Bible.
Then at the same time, there's the other side of the coin. And I've always said the key to the Christian life is balance. If you go to extremes, you'll end up in some kind of weird situation or you'll start a cult. Most cults are started from people believing something and taking it to an extreme. And so the other side of the coin is the benefits of being married. Solomon said in Ecclesiastes, two are better than one. If one falls down, you can help the other one up. Two are better than one because you can keep each other warm. But there's a lot of practical reasons to being married. Sometimes when we are on one side of the fence, the other side of the fence looks better. Like, I guarantee you there's probably a lot of married people watching who wish they were single because their marriage isn't what they thought it was going to be, or it's not going in the direction, then you probably have a lot of singles looking at everybody else that's married and think life is wonderful, thinking, I would be so much better off if I was married. I actually think there's a lot of people married that should have never been married. I don't think they're necessarily wired to make the sacrifice that you need to make to be married.
Or maybe they just got married a little too soon and God hadn't done a work in them yet and they weren't ready to compromise and give up their desires for the other person. Because marriage is a lot of compromise. What is God actually doing in a season of waiting for someone? Because he's doing a lot. The waiting season is not wasted. He's doing an inner work within us that will produce a lot of fruit if we just let him prune us and remake us and shape us. So what is he doing?
Preparing. I've always said healthy people make healthy marriages. So if you have one healthy person, and I mean emotionally, spiritually, and you have one who's not, it's going to be a bumpy road. And so part of that process is trying to identify what is God doing to prepare me for that marriage when it comes. And so that's certainly a big part of it.
I think another thing is he's teaching us to have him as our first love. He taught me that he satisfies, he fills the deepest recesses of my soul that only he can.
I think that in an ideal situation would be, I would love to get married, but I don't need to be married. That's a tough place for people to get to, though. I remember recently when I went through divorce and I was single, my sister said, there's no way you can be unmarried. You need to be married. She knew I needed that kind of encouragement and someone to walk through life with me. I think there's some people, and I meet them all the time, who are single and could not be more at peace and enjoying life. But there's all different kinds of reasons for that. But I think the preparing part, you've heard me do weddings. And one thing I say in every wedding ceremony is God did not create marriage to make you happy. He created it to kill you.
It makes me laugh every time. The first time I heard it, my mouth dropped because I wasn't expecting it.
And I always add, and for some of you, it's working, because marriage can be very, very tough. But what I mean by that is that Philippians 2 passage where not merely looking out for your own interests, but looking out for the interest of others. And you've got to get to a place where you're willing to die to some of your own interests and your own desires so that you can actually look out for the interests of the other person. And if that happens mutually in a relationship, it's a beautiful thing. But if you go into a one-sided relationship and one person's, I need, I need, I need, I need, and you're constantly being the source of their strength and encouragement, that's going to be a tough road. Yeah.
I love the verse in Ecclesiastes. There's a time for everything and everything a season. So it's only a season. It's not the rest of your life necessarily.
Yeah. And I think when you're single, there's certain things you should. A lot of people say this, and my son and I were actually having this conversation on the phone just today. There's a lot of people that believe there is a perfect mate that God has designed for you to marry.
I used to believe that.
Yeah. And I used to say, okay, that's fine, but here's the problem. It only takes one person marrying the wrong person, and the whole world is out of sync. Okay? And so that can't be true.
It can't be either, because what if the person you're praying for and waiting for, I would write love letters, dear future husband, pour my heart out to them, telling me how much I love them and I was waiting for them, I was keeping myself for them. But what if that man was not listening to the Lord or had walked away? Am I out of hope now? That's the only one?
So I think there's things you look for, and it's not just, do you love each other? Or do you find each other attractive? Do you both have the same color Bible? Wow, it must be a God thing, right? For example, if one is driven, the Bible talks about being unequally yoked, and we immediately think it means if you're a believer or an unbeliever. By the way, that's not just marriage. That could be a business partner. That could be your best friends and confidant. If you're a Christian, you should not have an unbeliever that you get advice from. That's your person to go to.
Both being yoked, a strong donkey and a weaker donkey, they're just going to keep going in circles. No one's going to push the other one forward and on and encourage them and motivate them and help them to soar to new heights in their relationship with Jesus Christ. It's going to be stagnant. You're going nowhere.
And in business, if you have a business partner who's not a believer, odds are at some point you're going to have some kind of value that you're going to see differently. And that can cause conflict. And so what did Solomon say? How can two walk together unless they're agreed? Unless you're going in the same direction, you can't walk together.
Is that why they say don't mix friends with business?
That could be true sometimes. But sometimes we take advantage of people when they're friends. We assume certain things. But getting back to the single thing, there's several questions you should look at. Sometimes it could be levels of education. Sometimes it could be goals. Sometimes somebody may be driven and the other person not be driven. And they may not seem like a lot when you're in love, but if you haven't walked through and understand those things, eventually along the way, they could turn into conflict. There's always this saying that opposites attract, and they do, but then they attack. They attract initially, but then if those opposites are enough to cause conflict, then they turn into issues. You want to be careful. You want to take that journey lightly.
So your advice for someone who is single and they're looking for a future prospect, what should they be looking for?
I think that when God created Adam, he said it's not good for him to be alone. He was incomplete. So when he created Eve, God said, oh, this is good. In fact, the only thing God said it's not good was Adam being alone. He looked at him like, dude, this is not good. I mean, he's swinging through the trees with the monkeys and running through with his shoelaces untied. He's going to kill himself. So, but when they came together and became one, I like to think of it, it's like this. It doesn't mean you have to be just alike, but you're willing to fill each other's gaps. You do that for me, for example. You know me, I'm very generous. Don't worry about money a whole lot. My sister used to tell me I'm going to end up living under a bridge one day because it's just the way I'm wired. If I see somebody that needs something, I want to help them, which is good, but I need somebody also who helps provide boundaries for me. And you're very good. You're very frugal. You're very good with money. And so I think we balance each other out. We found that rhythm where there are now times you suggest, hey, we should maybe be generous in this situation, help this individual out. So it's not me being generous and you keeping me in line. And now I have become in my own life more frugal. And I think about things financially that maybe I never did. But that's what I mean. There's that old dumb movie where it says, you complete me. But in a good marriage, that's what you're doing. You're filling in each other's gaps so that you're one.
I always say you compliment someone because I'm complete with who I am in Jesus Christ. You don't make me complete because let's say something happened to you or something happened to me. Are you no longer complete in who you are in the Lord?
So well, we're talking about marriage, though.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah. So that's the only reason. I think that's how two become one. You fill in each other's gaps. But yeah, it's like, and when it works the way God designed it with the right individual, it's a beautiful thing.
I've become frugal, too, because if you know my past, when I was modeling, I didn't know when I was going to get a paycheck. But I still remember when I got paid from Teen Vogue, I did 5 of their events nationwide, and there was a list of probably 5 places or so that I tied to that had really impacted me when I was traveling, a church in New York City, a radio station, and Mercy Ministries in Nashville because I had an eating disorder, and I liked the impact they were having on people that struggled with the same thing like I did. What are some red flags that people might ignore when they're dating, looking for a relationship?
Easy, hot temper, someone that snaps easily, that would be a red flag. Someone who doesn't keep their word.
Yes, that was what I was getting ready to say.
It could even be small things like, I'll be there at 7, but they show up at 7:30 and we all can get in traffic and stuff like that. But there's no sense of, oh man, I feel so bad. I got here late. I had a lunch today and this guy's never late. And he was about 10 minutes late, drove him nuts.
But he texted you.
Yes. But again, that's a way of showing respect. I would say someone who doesn't, especially as you're getting more serious in the relationship, who doesn't consult with you about what I would call significant decisions. Like, for example, you and I, we've never even had this conversation, but I know you would not spend money of any significant amount, probably not necessarily to get my approval, because you know I'm going to say yes anyway, but it's more of a courtesy thing of saying, I was planning on doing this or buying this. Are you okay with that? That's just a common courtesy in relationships. Someone where whatever's going on, it has to be their way. Where you're going to go to dinner, where you're going to spend your time, where you're going to go on vacation.
It's all about them.
Now, I'll tell you when that works. If one's completely compliant and just says, sure, whatever you want to do. And that's kind of a red flag too, because they may say, sure, whatever you want to do. But inside, there can be resentment that can begin to build. And so you just have to be careful. Like, it's either my way or the highway. And if there's something you really want to do, and I do it, but I do it with a crappy attitude, you know what I'm saying? You just want to, it's little trends. Because here's the thing, the greatest lie of the human race is, I'll change him. It just doesn't happen. Every woman who's gotten married or gotten into a relationship thinking, I'll change him, that's just not what's going to happen. So the hardest thing is saying, we've been down this road together for this length of time, and I've got a lot invested. The hardest thing is at that point, walk away, because you see the red flags. But many times people think, by getting married, by having a sweet wedding, by exchanging rings and vows, that somehow that's going to magically change things. I used to, when I did a lot of pre-marriage counseling, I said, if you fight and have a stormy relationship before you get married, marriage will not solve it. It will only amplify it, because now you're going to have more stresses and more issues. And so if you're dating and you're already having a stormy relationship, that's a big red flag.
That's a good point. We can't change other people. God has to change their hearts. What does it say in the Bible about a nagging wife? It's better to live
in the corner of an attic than it is to live in a broad house with a nagging wife. Why do I know that by heart?
I don't know. You're laughing way too much. The Bible talks about submission. Wives, submit to your husbands. What does that actually mean?
You do everything I say.
Yeah, right. That'll be a sound bite.
I mean, that's one of those things that's taken so out of context. And first of all, if you took it literally, it says wives submit to your husbands, but it also said husbands, you be willing to lay down your life for your wives.
Love your wives as Christ loved the church.
Exactly.
That's a high calling.
Exactly. So even if you wanted to take it in the context of that, men, we are called to a much higher standard. I think that part of it is when God looks at a marriage, at the end of the day, he is going to hold the husband responsible first. And so I think that there's a higher calling to us as men to be, like you said, to love you the way Christ loved the church, which means I'm willing to lay down my life for you, to die for you. Women being submissive has been taken out of, hey, I'm the boss, you do whatever I tell you. But again, marriage, when it works in its most beautiful simplicity, is when there's mutual submission. Because even in Philippians chapter 2, who's the example of laying down his life and ultimately submitting? Jesus, who didn't take leaving heaven, you know, something lightly, set aside attributes and came and humbled himself as a servant, even to death, death on a cross. And so if you want to look at an example for men, that's the example we've been called to. But mutual submission is simply, for example, you and I, we live busy lives. We live stressful lives in some ways. So I have to recognize when you're going through a period where you need me submitting to you because you need more encouragement, support than I need at this time. You're really good at saying, okay, I know you're going through this season where you need me there more to support you than worrying about my own stuff. If you can get into that kind of rhythm, you're going to be good. And I think that's just a daily thing. I think another thing is, how can I serve her today? What can I do for her today? And it's amazing the little silly things you can find to do for your spouse every day that everybody else may laugh at, but it's your way of saying you're the most important thing in my life. I don't think it's so much of submitting. I do believe that in the pecking order of things, God's going to hold me responsible for our marriage. I do believe that. But at the same time, your role is not to do whatever I tell you to do. I don't believe that. I think that's been taken advantage of.
What does God mean, though, by wives submitting to their husbands? Like, as the spiritual authority in the household, as a man, as a leader?
If you think the word submission, think of a submarine. Submarine means under marine, underwater. Submission would be under mission. So there are times when you put your mission under my mission. And there are times I put my mission under your mission. That's what it means. I do think at the end of the day, if it came down to having to make a decision and you can't agree, I don't even believe that if you can't agree, then it's the man's decision because I'm supposed to submit. I think in a good marriage, you recognize strengths. There are strengths you have I don't have. There's probably a strength or two I have that you don't have. And so when we find ourselves in those situations, I'm a wise person if I feel like she knows more about this than I do. She's had more experience in this area than I do. She sees this more clear than I do. She's got a good track record in this area. Wisdom says, I go with her.
I think women have intuition. Sometimes we can pick up things long before the men can pick it up. I think it's God-given. I mean, I submit. You tell me not to do things, and I'm like, okay, I won't do them, like doing the dishes.
That is true. Whenever I say, don't do the dishes, you always submit. I can't think of anything else right now. But
I don't always submit because I do them.
The joke sometimes is
because I'm literally in the kitchen.
You need to talk to your mom about what it means to be submitting. So we laugh about it. But well, listen, there's something wrong with a man who needs his wife to submit. If I were a man and I felt like she is not submitting to me, I would start checking, what am I doing in my life that's not reflecting the kind of love where she wants to at times submit to me and at times I'm going to submit to her? What's the problem? There might be a chip on the shoulder. That might just be some insecurity that comes out in trying to be. But I think that's an overrated thing. Christ was the humblest, ultimate servant when it came to submitting. And then he said this, have that same attitude. The same attitude you see in Jesus having yourself.
In today's culture, it could be, well, I'm not beneath them. We were created equally. Maybe that kind of.
And I think men are called to lead. And I think men are called to be gentlemen. I'm old school. I believe men should open doors. I believe men should do whatever they can to make their life better. And, for example, I can't cook a lick. That's true. Not true. I grilled chicken last night.
You did. But, it was tasty.
And I was so nervous, but I got it right.
And you put together the grill.
Yeah, there you go. So I was probably better at putting the grill together than cooking the chicken. But we kind of have a thing. You cook, and I think you'll vouch for this. When you ask me, what do I want? Usually my answer is, what's easiest for you? Because I'm not doing the cooking, so I'm not really in a position to say, I want you to make me. So you give me two or three options, what's easiest? I'm really good at doing dishes, and that's why I do tell you, do not do those dishes, because I know you're going to cook, I'm going to do my part, I'm going to do the dishes. I think if you can enter into a relationship like that, you can probably work through most things.
It's teamwork.
It's teamwork.
Helping each other out.
Teamwork makes a dream work.
Reminded me of Moses in the Bible with Aaron and Hur. Anytime they lifted up his arms, they were winning in the battle. But anytime his arms went down, I pray for friends like that too.
And again, the other thing is what I call division of labor. You share in the labor. You do the laundry. Now, I help you fold it. I don't fold my clothes as well as you fold yours. So you fold yours and I fold mine. I make the bed every day. That's just something that I enjoy doing. You cook. I wash the dishes. You clean the toilets. I vacuum the floor. And so if you can understand that we're in this together and that truly is two is better than one, it's amazing how much simpler it can be.
What does it look like to honor God in singleness and in marriage?
I'm not sure there's really a difference. Obviously, in all of our lives, our first responsibility is to God.
Love the Lord your God with all your heart.
I'm pretty sure that if I'm honoring God with all my heart as a husband and you're honoring God with all your heart, as a wife, probably a lot of our problems are going to be settled and be resolved. I talked about this a few weeks ago from Philippians. He talks about set your mind on. And I use the illustration, and it's kind of like a marriage. If you want to tune a piano, you don't just find a piano and then tune another piano to that piano. You get a tuning fork, and you tune one piano, and then you go and tune the other piano. And now both pianos are in tune. In the same way, if you're in tune in your relationship with God and I'm in tune with my relationship with God, it really is that pyramid. You got me, you got you, you got God, and we're in tune. If we're in tune with God, then we automatically should be in tune with each other. If I'm seeking the heart of God and you're seeking the heart of God, we're going to find the heart of God. If I'm seeking to serve you and you're seeking to serve me, we're going to be okay. We're not going to have to worry about mutual submission. So at the end of the day, it comes down to, are we both in tune with God? Are we honoring him in our life, our priorities, and those kinds of things? And then what happens down here between me and you is automatically going to begin to fall in place because we're both in tune with him.
Was there ever a time you got this wrong?
Yes, lots of times, because we get out of tune. We start looking into our own interests instead of the interests of others. We get bitter. We have sometimes conflict not resolved. I think there's a very practical reason. Paul says, don't let the sun go down on your anger, because we all know it just seethes. You wake up the next morning, and if you don't resolve it, sometimes it can be worse. One of the principles we talk about all the time is that timing is more important than content. There may be something that may be a little tension, but when do you address it? I just had this conversation with somebody else the other day on the phone. The timing of having that conversation is much more important than what the content is, because you want to be in a position where the other person's, regardless of what the issue is, ready to receive it.
Well, your emotions aren't flying
exactly.
sky high. And
so
everywhere.
If that's the case, if I need to have that conversation with you, and honestly, I'm speaking hypothetically because it hardly ever occurs, it's my job just to pray that God prepares your heart. And then he gives me the wisdom to know when that right moment is. I think the other thing is, I didn't learn this till later in life, but whenever you have to have that conversation, let's say you offend me and I'm a little upset about it, my feelings are hurt or whatever. Part of me wants to what? Talk back and say, okay, you know, and like say something maybe that'll hurt you a little bit, because that's what you do when you argue. But if I can pause, and what I've learned is, don't have that conversation till I know in my heart I've forgiven you and I've let it go. Because now I'm coming to you and my attitude is, you just got to hear what I got to say and get my pound of flesh. Now I'm coming with you through the attitude like, hey, listen, that hurt me, but I've already forgiven you. I just want to talk to you about how do we make sure that doesn't happen again and what can we learn from it? See, that's a whole different attitude. Now all of a sudden we're having a solution-driven conversation instead of what you said. But this is something else I've learned too, and I also had this conversation with someone this week. Sometimes when I think, you know what, this is not the right time to have a conversation, by the time it seems like it is the right time, it's not an issue anymore. And often I'm like, that really wasn't even worth the conversation. That just was her having a bad day, her having a bad moment, me having a bad day, me having a bad moment. You know what? Let's move on. And I have just found much more peace in that. Now, there are some things like, okay, this has got to be talked about at some point. But I will tell you what, they're more rare than people think.
I think one thing you've learned is you said you never used to give your opinion. You've worked on that. So that's one thing you learned.
And I've told you this is big for me, because typically I wouldn't say this. I am a compliant person. I have a tendency just to be quiet and smile and say, oh, yeah, that's fine. But then a lot of things can build up when that happens. A lot of things can build up. And especially if it's over years. And that could be at work. That could be with your board. It could be with a spouse. It could be with all kinds of situations. A friend, even. So there are those times you got to pick the hill that's worth dying on. That is this really worth the conversation? And if you feel like the relationship stalled or you're at an impasse, yeah, that's when you have to have the conversation. Like, we can't move on until we get this resolved.
You are the opposite of me. I'm just thinking about this because...
Oh, you're the biggest straight shooter in the world.
I would just prefer to have the conversation to get it out and to address it and then move on from it. We're done with it. Not just you. I'm saying with friends, with a coworker, whoever it might be. And it's like, okay, we've talked about it.
See, aren't you lucky to be married to me?
But one thing I've learned throughout the years is I used to nag because I thought that by saying it multiple times, repeatedly, over and over and over again, that someone would change. And I did it all wrong. And I had to repent of that because that was me in the Bible. And I started praying for people or for this person. And it was God that had to move in their heart, to open their eyes, to deliver them from deaf ears. Only he can show someone what you want them to know or what he wants to reveal to them. So that was something I definitely learned. Now I just take things to him because he can do a lot more with a person than we could ever do with our words or even with our actions.
It's true. I can't change your heart. You can't change my heart. God can. And sometimes we just have to accept we're all different. I mean, we have different personalities. We have different experiences in life. We have different scars. And sometimes we just need to extend more grace. Sometimes we need to have, like I said, a solution-driven conversation. And you always feel better afterwards. In fact, rarely can I think of any that you don't walk away resolved. But I'm just saying, because of my personality, not everything has to be resolved completely the way I feel it has to be resolved. Sometimes it's like, you know what? Maybe I got some growth to do in this area, so I'm just going to back off on this one for a while. And often I find out, okay, that wasn't as big a deal to me as I thought it was in the moment.
What is the biggest issue in marriage? Is it communication, finances?
Obviously, communication.
I think communication
is a big one. The physical one can be a big one. Finances are a big one. Children are a big one. Often the one that comes to the surface that causes the most conflict, just because it's such a reality, is finances. Financial stress can really do that. The other thing is just unresolved conflict. I tell people all the time, when you get married, now rings have changed now, but used to be they were like either gold or silver or whatever. But the beautiful thing about a precious metal is it can get scuffed up and stuff, but you can take it to the jeweler and they can polish it. And it's like the day you bought it, it's back to its original luster. And relationships are a lot like that. If you don't deal with issues and you just keep getting scuffed up, they're going to build. And after time, say expectations aren't met, and then resentment starts to set in, and then walls start to be built.
And then you get bitterness.
And then bitterness, yeah. You just have to early on try to deal with those things.
And that can lead to not even respecting another person.
Yeah. I think one time I preached on thou shalt not murder, and you can see the steps.
Oh, yeah, that was powerful.
Like, usually it's like, you hurt me, you disappointed me, it doesn't get resolved, and now I become bitter, and they keep going. Then it becomes anger, then it becomes this, and then before you know it, whoa. But no one just gets up and murders somebody. Now, that's the extreme, but what you can do is build a wall. And couples know when they have a wall because there's an iciness. There's just an iciness.
Cold shoulder.
Yeah. It's not hard to pick up on that. The one thing I love we do is we go to bed every night holding hands. And you can't do that if you, and I don't think we've missed a night.
I don't think we have either.
I think when we were in Montana, we had separate beds one time, but maybe then, but I mean.
They gave us two beds.
Not for practical reason. There's never been a night where I'm not holding your hand. There's something about doing that. And we don't do it long, maybe 3 or 4 minutes, but it's just that you're ending the day okay. So I think it's little things you can do like that too.
Can you leave the singles with some encouraging word and then people who are married? My encouragement to the singles would be to keep your eyes fixed upon Jesus, spend time with him, grow in your relationship with him, because he could be maturing you, deepening you. And while he's working on you, he's also working on that person who is meant for you, and he will bring you together at his appointed time.
Yeah, I can't tell you how many conversations I've had with people that were single, and then all of a sudden, they found the love of their life and they're getting married.
It happens when you least expect it.
Well, here's the thing. What I've learned by listening to their stories, if their passion is to find someone, they might find someone, but it probably won't be the right person. If their passion is to pursue God and be the best person they can be in Christ, it is amazing in those moments. They say, well, you know, I took my focus off finding someone and I put my focus on finding God and experiencing God and living with God, how God at that moment brought someone out of the blue into my life, and here we are. And I've heard that so many times over my years with couples. And so I would just say, if your driving passion in life is to find someone, that's not healthy, because you're probably going to settle, either going to settle at some point, or you've set such unrealistic standards, there's no one ever going to meet them. So what you can do is focus on yourself and make sure you're who you are in Christ, that you're experiencing his abundant life. You're being the person that he's created you. You're the best version of you, not from your perspective, but from God's perspective. It's kind of amazing at those moments where God seems to say, now you're ready.
It's almost like they're no longer an idol or first place. You've completely, entirely, and fully surrendered that desire, that longing, that dream, that prayer to God. And he's like, okay, now you can have it.
And that's probably true in so many areas of life, chasing the perfect career, chasing the perfect whatever. And sometimes when you just say, God, that's not my pursuit anymore, God's like, okay, then I'm going to help you out a little bit. You've learned your lesson. I've always said that God takes us through things to teach us. And then when we learn them, he's like, okay, all right, now we're not going to worry about that anymore. We're going to go find a new thing to work on. But
yay.
Yeah, it will be. But at least you just got to get to that point that, and I think that's where Paul. The one thing about going through Philippians, and I think this has helped me, maybe you haven't seen the difference, but basically he's saying, whatever situation you're in, if you can accept, God has me right here for a reason, there's a way to find contentment in that. He may have you in a storm, but like I said, life's all about storms. You're either in a storm, you're coming out of a storm, you're going in a storm. If life's good right now, get ready, you're getting ready to go into a storm. But if you can get like Paul, who's sitting under house arrest, chained to a soldier, is going to be beheaded probably within 2 years, and he knows it's coming. In fact, I was doing a little research. A lot of people believe that the reason Paul got beheaded was because Nero's wife became a Christian. There's some interesting things there, but my point is simply this. If I know that God's in it, if I know this is part of the plan, I don't have to like it, but I can find joy in the fact that he's at work. And if you're on a curvy road, every curve is just a reminder that God's right there with you. And I think if you're single, if you're like, man, I tell you what, I've done everything I can. I'm doing everything to be the person God's called me. Not to be the best wife or the best husband. I'm just trying to be the best person that God has called me to be. If you don't find the right person, you'll find that there's some contentment in that position.
Do you have an encouraging word for the married couples?
No.
Go on date nights. Spend time together. Quality time.
Date nights. You know what? There's the old saying, what you did to get her is what you do to keep her. When I was teaching through the book of Revelation, he said to the church, you left your first love. And if you felt like you've gotten cold in your relationship with God, go back and do what you did at the beginning. Because I guarantee you what you did in your beginning of your relationship with God, if it's gotten cold, you stop doing those things. So go back and do the simple things, the time you spent in prayer, the time you spent thinking about him, the time you spent walking around listening to the music and singing praises to God in the house. Right? Go back and begin to do those things. And it is true in our relationships. You got to go back, for example, like what attracted me to them originally? Okay, I got to get back and start focusing on those things and not the little things that have gotten in the way over the year that now I'm focused on. Let me get back to what was the original thing that attracted me and drew me to them. And sometimes you just have to do that, yeah.
Because life gets busy and we no longer make our marriages a priority. It's our job, the kids, running errands, meetings.
Yep.
So you have anything else?
That's it. That's all I got.
So wherever you are right now, single, dating, married, God sees you. And he's not late. He's always on time, even though you may not see that right now. I'm waiting for something. He seems a little late for me, but when he shows me what he had in mind the whole time, I know I'll be blown away. He's preparing you. He's shaping you. He's leading you. And if you trust him in the season, he will guide you into what's right, not just what's easy.
Seek first the kingdom of God. All these things will be added unto you. And he knows what you want, and he knows what you need. And that's the key point. If you realize he's already aware of it, there's nothing wrong with pursuing it and asking God for it, but you don't have to worry over the fact that he's already aware. And maybe he's just waiting for you, like you said, to be prepared.
My encouragement would be pursue God. Whether you're married, whether you're single, pursue God. I love that series you did, or that message you spoke on. It was powerful.
Hey, maybe next time we do a podcast, we can talk about sports. What do you think?
I don't know. The last Duke game, I was like, who are you?
They ripped my heart out and stomped.
You were reserved for the most part. You like harmony. You're calm. You do not get mad.
Not with Duke plays.
But you were so fired up. And that was a crazy game. I cannot believe they lost it. They were up 20 points.
Well, you know, I'm an old coach. Certain things that are the death, and one is turnovers. And that game they lost, remember they were up by, 19? And they had 8 turnovers in the second half that turned into 16 points. And so as I'm watching those things, I'm like, you idiots, stop that. And they were being sloppy. It wasn't that the other team necessarily was playing. They were just being lackadaisical on passes and things like that.
My AU basketball coach drilled this into us. Defense wins games.
It's exactly right.
And he was a phenomenal coach. I will never forget him. He taught me so much, and I grew as a basketball player under him. He was a great teacher.
Well, that'll be our next podcast.
We'll see. I don't know. Let's see if you remember this. Thank you so much for joining us today. Remember, when life feels out of focus,
get in focus. No, actually, there's always someone who brings clarity.
There's always one who brings clarity.
And that's him.
We'll see you next time.